Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Lavelnier. There's crime in this hour. Later on, The Whistler from 1952, but first, an episode of The Crime Club. From the Mutual Broadcasting System, the story The Sun is a Witness, first heard on April 3rd, 1947.
I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. The Sun is a Witness. Yes, we have that Crime Club story for you. Come right over. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The book is on this shelf. Here it is. The Sun is a Witness by Aaron Mark Stein. A very unusual story of a design for killing that couldn't succeed without murder. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. It was Tim Mulligan's job as an archaeologist to find out about dead civilizations. And he was finding out about the Anasazi, the Indian cliff dwellers who inhabited the Great Canyon walls of the Southwest many centuries ago. It was late morning, June 22nd, the second day of summer, and Tim Mulligan was digging carefully in one of the caves high above the canyon floor when George Dillon, the owner of the property, and Tim's benefactor, climbed slowly up from the camp cave 30 feet below. He stopped to catch his breath.
George! What are you doing up here?
I wanted to see how you're getting along, Tim.
You shouldn't have done it. You're hard. Where's Tony Blake?
Well, he's around somewhere. You're not going to snitch on me, are you, boy?
Well, you're his responsibility, Pop. He's your doctor.
Yes, but he didn't join the outfit so he can take care of me.
What do you mean?
He wants me to take care of him.
Oh, that.
Yeah. And maybe I will, after he and my niece Marion get married. But right now, it's Indian history that's got all my attention.
Oh, yeah. Well, I dug up a grave, George.
And it's Ozzy?
I think so. I haven't unwrapped the mummy yet.
Good. We can do that together. Come on, let's go.
Hmm.
What's that?
The wind.
No, Tim. No wind ever made a sound like that. Sounds human. It is human. And it's coming from...
Yeah, George, George, take it easy.
It's a cave.
There's no one in there.
The open grave. The Anasazi mummy. Tim.
This has got to be a trick.
Tim.
George.
My heart.
Where's the digitalis?
In the... It's all right. I just lost my breath.
Huh?
I'll be all right.
Are you sure?
Yes. Help me down to the camp cave.
You bet. You bet. Let me call for Tony first. I feel a lot better with him around. Tony! Tony, play! He's out of range. Let's go. How is he, Tony?
He just fell asleep.
Hmm?
Let's get away from this cave opening. I don't want him disturbed.
Okay.
Now, what about that ghost, Tim?
Somebody's trying to kill your patient, Doctor.
Hmm?
Do you think he can be scared to death?
With his heart, anything can happen.
That's what I mean. Where's Marion?
Are you kidding?
Not this trip. You, Marion, and I are the only ones here with George. The others...
Well, that's where she went, to the others at the ranch house.
When?
This morning, while you were digging for your ghost. She was worried about her brother.
Oh. Oh, of course, it's been 4 days since Fraser went back to the house with Matt Casey to get provisions. I didn't realize...
Now, look, Tim, I gotta talk to you about something.
Yeah?
Give up this crazy project.
Give it up.
It's not doing George any good. His heart can't take it.
I'm not his doctor, Tony.
And I am. So what, he won't listen to me. As long as you're on the job, he wants to be with you. Don't you understand?
Yes, I think I do.
He has a fibrillator heart in a very bad shape, and the slightest stimulation...
You're not worried about that, Tony, are you?
What?
You've got an axe of your own to grind, and it's beginning to look like a battle axe.
Don't get dirty, Mulligan.
I'll try not to. You can't cut me out, so you're trying to move me out. Anything to get George's mind off Indians and onto your sanitarium project.
It's a darn sight more useful than digging for dried up bones.
That depends on how much of a scientist you are.
I told you not to get dirty, Mulligan.
Stop waving those fists. You're liable to hit yourself in the face.
Jim! Tony!
George!
Come in here, both of you.
I thought you were sleeping.
I heard every word you two said out there. When do you think I'm going to die, Tony?
If you continue to stay here, George...
I'm going to stay here until Timothy finishes what he's doing.
Then there's no telling. There's nothing I can do about it.
Are you quitting?
No, I'll be around if you need me.
You shouldn't have been so rough with him, Pop.
Tim.
You know what, George?
Tim, do you really think somebody's trying to scare me to death?
It's possible.
Hmm. That fellow?
I don't know. I'd rather not believe your own doctor's out to kill you.
He's the only one here with us, Tim. And if that sound we heard was not a ghost, but...
What's
that? Rattlesnake.
Where?
In here someplace.
Now stay where you are, George, and don't get excited. I'll look for it.
Wait!
Try not to get excited, George, and don't get off that cot.
You'll never find it, Tim.
If it's in this cave, I will.
It isn't.
What?
It's in this wall next to me. Solid rock. And we can hear the rattle.
Oh, wait a minute, George.
I don't want to believe in ghosts, but nobody can make that sound come out of solid rock.
Oh, wait. All right, Pop, it's gone. We can relax. Yeah, Tony's right. This is a bad place for you.
I'm not afraid, Timothy.
But I am. I'd like to get you back to the ranch house where you might get an even break.
I'm not running away.
Good for you. I'm taking you away. Now sit tight. I'll get Tony and we'll load the stuff into the car.
Tim, does that mean you're giving up your work here?
No, indeed, Pop. It means I'm going into another business. Ghost hunting.
Well, George, as soon as we get to the ranch house, you start taking things easy.
I'll do nothing of the kind, Tony. Say, Tim.
Yeah?
How soon do you expect to go back to the camp?
Right after we get you set.
Good. I'll get Matt Casey to go back with you. He knows every inch of that canyon. And if someone's out there playing ghost, or was...
Don't be surprised if it was one of the Indians from the reservation.
Is that your theory, Tony?
They're very superstitious about their dead being dug up, Tim. Especially if they're going to be used as museum pieces.
That's enough of that. Slow down. There's the ranch house.
Oh, say, there's Fraser walking away from his car. Honk the horn, Tony.
Ah, look who's here. He must have come up just behind me.
Is the expedition over?
Temporarily.
Give us a hand with the luggage, Fraser.
For you, Uncle George, anything. Where's the rest of the party?
Well, what do you mean?
Matt Casey and Marion, of course. Are you trying to kid me?
Well, aren't they here?
No. Some joke, huh?
Fraser, Marion left this camp this morning. She was coming to see how you and Matt were getting along.
Matt and I? But Matt went back to camp 2 days ago. He took a truckload of provision.
Are you sure?
Now, look, Tim, I was here when he left.
You smell as though you might be foggy about things.
I've had a few drinks, but I know what I'm talking about. I pick up the stuff in town, and Matt took it from here.
Why didn't you come back with him, Fraser?
I took a liking to civilization, Uncle George. So after Matt bounced off, I bounced back to town where the civilization is beautiful and lively. I got back a few minutes ago.
You were there for 2 whole days?
I couldn't help it. The attraction was magnetic.
Can it be proved, Fraser?
Don't be a comedian, Tim. What's mine is mine.
What about Marion?
I don't know, Tony. Sis might have been here. Say, maybe she hit for town.
For some lively civilization?
What does that mean, Mulligan?
Nothing personal, Dr. Blake. Why don't you take care of your patient while I go back to the camp to find out if the spirit is still functioning?
Hello? Hello? Anybody here? Tim.
Hello, Mary.
Where is everybody? Why didn't you answer me?
One question at a time, please.
I've been running around in circles all day. First the ranch house, nobody there. Then back to this.
I'm a little winded. Just give me time.
Where is everybody?
Everybody but Matt Casey is at the ranch house.
Why?
They gave up the ghost.
Huh?
What are you doing up here on top of the canyon wall?
Oh, this is going to be a national park someday.
Uh-huh.
Monument to Indian culture. Don't you feel proud of what Uncle George is going to do?
I didn't see your car below, Marion.
Always stick to the subject. You can't lose that way. My car isn't parked in the canyon. I came up the back way for a change.
Mm-hmm. Bet you had a very good reason, too.
Perfect. I got tired of the canyon road.
Of course.
Matt Casey must have had the same feeling about it.
What?
The look down there where my car is parked. His truck's there, too.
So?
Yes, and it's loaded to the hilt with provisions. I call that being very ruthless.
Yes.
All that good food left down there to spoil. And I'm starving.
Well, at least you've got a doctor who can feed you vitamins.
Funny man.
Unless you're a ghost and you don't need vitamins.
What does that mean?
Haunt me and find out.
Are you crazy?
Try it. Say, ahai, ahai. Come on, come on. Say it in a very deep voice.
You are crazy.
As deep as you can make it. Ahai, ahai.
Yeah, I've always wondered about you archaeologists. Excuse me, I have a date with a
mummy. Now, wait a minute.
Now, listen, you...
Look.
What?
Lying under that rock.
I don't... You must be seeing things.
Yes, everything. And it's only the tail of a rattlesnake.
Why, how wonderful. Another item for your collection?
Would you mind if I picked it up?
I wouldn't mind if you wore it on your nose.
Thanks, I didn't know you cared. See? It still rattles.
Yeah, I know something else that rattles. What was that?
The ghost. I shook this rattle close to the rock and... Yes, all I've got to do is get this rock out of the way like this. Now...
What's happening there?
A perfect chimney right through the canyon wall. Would you like to make a voice test, Marion?
Me? No, thank you. I don't like to hear myself talk.
Not even in the interest of science?
Goodbye, Tim. I'm going home.
Oh, wait. I'm going with you. There's so much I'd like to tell your uncle about a hole in the ground.
Uncle George, say, you had quite an experience up at the camp. Tony was just telling me about the ghost.
Yes, and it's occurred to me with Matt Casey missing...
Oh, he wouldn't try to kill me, Dr. Blake.
I didn't say that he would, George.
He's been working for me for 27 years. We're old friends. Frazier, I want you to organize a searching party for Matt.
All right, but if you ask me, he's going on a bender.
I don't think so.
He's done it before. Why, there were times when he'd bust out for a whole week.
He never did it when he had a special job to do. He knew we were waiting for those provisions at the camp.
Yes, that's right, Frazier.
Yes. He knew that I was waiting for something else that was much more important to me.
Something else?
Yes. Well, you might as well know about it now, Frazier. You too, Tony. I sent Matt Casey back here to type up a new will.
Oh?
Yep, I've decided to give all this property to the government for a national park.
Well, that's nothing new, if that's all you've decided.
That's all, Frazier. The rest of my property and all my cash go to you and Marion.
Uncle George.
Yeah?
Nothing. You're just a swell guy. I'd better go out and organize that searching party.
Yeah. And is for you, Tony.
No sanitarium, huh?
Yeah, that's up to Marion. If she wants to set one up for you after I'm dead, she can do it. With my blessing.
Marion? Still puzzles me.
Oh, please, Tim. I'm tired of you being puzzled.
Why did Matt Casey use this road instead of the canyon road?
Why is an archaeologist?
Would he have any reason for wanting to be heard but not seen?
Oh, dear.
Would you have any reason?
Excuse me. The company I keep.
All right, Marion, you don't have to talk to me. I don't wear a badge.
You don't know how pretty that makes you look.
Yeah, I think I do. By the way, why don't you and Tony get married?
There's no hurry.
He's broke, isn't he?
Da-da-dee,
and a big sanitarium with his name all over it could solve an ugly problem.
Uncle George is Tony's patient.
By design.
What do you mean by that?
You brought Tony out here.
Well, suppose I did. That doesn't mean... Now, look here, Mr. Mulligan. I don't like your insinuations.
So there's one thing about the Great Southwest that always fascinates me.
Don't change the subject.
Buzzards.
What?
Over there on that pile of rocks.
Well, you're not stopping, are you?
Of course. Where there are buzzards, there's death. And where there's death, I'm an archaeologist, remember?
Oh, don't be ridiculous. I want to get back to the ranch house.
You will. I'll just take the ignition key out to make sure you don't do it without me. Would you like to join this expedition?
No.
Oh, that's too bad. You don't know how cultural those things can... Alien.
What is it, a pioneer?
There's a body under those rocks. A human body.
What? Timothy Mulligan, if you're kidding
just
me...
Just a hand showing. Part of an arm.
Good heavens.
Looks like a man's.
He must have been caught in a rock fall. Let's dig him out. He might still be alive.
No, no. Not with rigor mortis, Marion.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. His fingers. All right, Marion. We better start digging. It's going to take a little time. This one last rock. Now, come on. Heave. Don't relax. Keep going. Come on.
What was that?
We'll look later. Let's get this rock off first.
You can sit down, Tim.
Yeah. Maybe you'd better go back to the car.
What'd you pick up?
This roll of film. Must have been spread out under part of that rock. What? Maybe when the pile hit him, it bounced out of his pocket.
Oh, you.
And when we moved that rock, it snapped back on the roll.
You would think that important, wouldn't you? What's a dead body to you?
I'm sorry, Marion, but there's nothing we can do for Matt Casey except turn him over, face up.
Yeah. No.
There are things I don't understand about this. Matt being here, and his truck 2 miles up the road, and an old hand like Matt being caught in a rock fall. What was he doing in this cave? Marion, ma'am, don't look. Marion, for Pete's sake, get a grip on yourself. Here, let me take you back to the car.
Lord, you leave me
now,
alone.
Now, please, listen to me.
I've known him practically all my life. He was my uncle's oldest friend.
Then listen to me and try to understand what I'm saying.
How are we going to tell Uncle George about this? How can
Marion, it was no accident. Matt was not killed by a rock fall.
What? What'd you say?
He was murdered.
Tim, I've had enough of you.
Now
and
listen.
You're...
Matt was clubbed to death and brought here.
I don't want to hear anymore.
Then look. He was lying in the sand, face down. His face was covered with blood. Dried blood. But the sand is clean.
Tim.
You see what I mean?
Please. Take me back to the ranch house. I'm afraid I'm going to be very sick.
Is that you, Frazier?
No, George. It's Marion and Tim.
Marion, darling, where have you been?
Not now, Tony. We've got to talk to Uncle George.
Well, what's the matter?
I thought it might be Frazier. He went out to organize a searching party for Matt Casey.
Oh. Well...
What is it, Marion?
Tim, maybe you better do the talking. I don't feel up to it.
What's wrong? Where's Matt?
I'll tell you, George, but I want you to sit down. Take it easy.
I'll do nothing of the kind. Where's Matt?
I say nothing until you sit down.
He's dead, isn't he? Oh, my Lord. Matt.
Tony, it's all right, Tim. I'll know what to do.
Where'd you find him?
Under a rock fall on the county road.
Matt? Under a rock fall? Did you bring him back with you?
No.
We left him there. We'll have to notify the sheriff.
Sheriff?
He was murdered, Uncle George. All the evidence is there. We didn't want to disturb a thing.
Murdered? Matt,
Where is it? In a bottle in the dresser in George's room. Quick. Marion, get me a glass of water and a spoon. George. Ah, George is going to be all right. He'll be all right. Can you hear, George? Tim, Marion.
Here, Tony. Anything I can do?
Yes, get Marion to hurry up that water.
Marion!
Yes, the cupboard door was stuck. I couldn't get
it. Here, give me that spoon. It's the worst attack I've ever seen have. Now, if I could get him to swallow this stuff.
Oh, he's spitting it out.
Quick, you've got to get it down. Marion, hold his head back.
No, I can't.
Hold it back, I tell you. Now, Tim, I want you to force his jaws apart and keep his mouth open. I've got to get this stuff down. There's no time to lose.
All right.
That's done. Now, I'll make sure. The water will wash it. Push it down. There. Now, let him relax. Here, Tim, take this bottle. I'm going to check his pulse.
What's wrong? But the digitalis isn't working. Never acted like that after taking the medicine. George! Uncle George, please.
It's all over, Marion. He's dead.
I didn't think, Tony. I just spoke without thinking.
Marion, there's no use blaming yourself anymore. It was bound to happen sooner or later.
I didn't have to throw it at him. I didn't have to yell murder.
Now, here. There you are. Take this pill.
What is it?
A sedative.
No,
I'm... Come on, be good to yourself. You'll sleep for a few hours.
Who's that?
I don't know. Now, look, dear, you're as jumpy as a bee. Now, take this.
Tony.
Oh, Frazier.
Come outside for a few minutes. I want to talk to you.
All right.
Hey, what's the matter with you, Marion? You've been crying.
Uncle George is dead.
What?
He had a heart attack. And it was my fault.
Oh, no. Dead.
Tim and I found Matt Casey's body under a rock fall off the county road. It looked like murder, and I... Like
Dad.
A fool. Like a stupid, hysterical fool. Like I couldn't keep it to myself.
I wasn't going to tell him. I was going to let you, Tony, break it to him easy.
What do you mean?
Well, we found Matt's body. It was... wrapped up in a blanket. I guess Tim must have done that to keep the buzzards off.
But did you tell the sheriff?
No, a couple of the men took the body to the mortician in town. We thought... Tony, how quick did he go? Uncle George.
Too quick, Frazier. Even the digitalis couldn't help him.
It couldn't help
Nothing
him?
Nothing could, Frazier, when it's not used.
Oh, what do you mean,
Tim? Here's the bottle with a digitalis label on it. I want you to taste its contents, Dr. Blake.
What are you trying to say?
I'm not trying. Go ahead, taste it.
I put that label on there myself.
I'm sure you did. And I'm sure you meant to do the right thing. Well, what's it taste like?
Quinidine sulfate.
Yes, that's what I thought. A powerful heart stimulant. When that gets into a fibrillator heart, it becomes a killer.
Tim!
I'm afraid so, Marion.
No, Uncle George was not murdered. I'll never believe it.
That bottle proves it, whether you believe it or not. How about it, Tony?
Don't understand.
Did you have quinidine sulfate in your collection of bottles?
Yes, but that doesn't mean that I... Now, look here, Tim. I'm the only doctor for miles around. I keep a lot of medicines for emergency purposes.
Of course, go
ahead. Can't you two fight this out some other time and some other
now,
place?
Now, wait a minute, Frazier.
I don't want any more talk.
Not right now, anyway.
Okay. I'll say no more. Until the sheriff gets here.
I'll send for him myself.
Good, good.
Later. I think Marion and I should have some time to ourselves, don't you? Before Uncle George becomes Exhibit A?
Well, that's your privilege. Well, if anyone should want me, I'll be in my room, wondering about things. Oh, hello, Marion.
You've been in here so long, I thought you'd died.
No such luck.
What are you doing?
I'm developing.
What?
Not my muscles, honey.
Not your personality, either.
Touché. Did Frazier send for the sheriff?
I don't know. He's been hibernating in the study all afternoon. Now, look, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to believe a lot of things you've said about murder.
That's so kind of you.
But is it going to do anybody any good to make a fuss about it?
Won't do the killer any good.
Be reasonable. Frazier and I are very rich now. And I'm very much in love with Tony.
I'm a stubborn cuss, Marion, when I'm right. And you haven't got enough money to make me think wrong.
How much do you want?
Nothing. Excuse me, Marion. I want to switch on the lights.
Suppose I were to kill you.
Huh? Oh, in that case, I'd be dead.
No one would ever know. Frazier and Tony wouldn't tell. Think about it, Tim.
This is the stuff. Here, Marion.
You'll disappear. It can be done, Timothy. There's a lot of open land out here. Places people don't go to.
Think of the place you'd go to, Marion. Here. I want to show you something.
Tim!
Now listen, Marion. I've got a lot of friends in New York, and they know where I am. And if they don't hear from me, they're going to wonder and ask a lot of questions. So put down that gun and come over here.
I'm not interested in a strip of film.
But you should be. This is the film we found next to Matt's body. And it tells an amazing story.
What?
Yeah. Do you see those four dark streaks on the negative?
Well, what about them?
Now, they all start at one point and then spread like a fan. The first one is short, Second one's a little longer. The third one is the longest. And the fourth one is shorter.
So what does it prove?
It proves, Marion, that the sun is a witness. And right here on this negative, it's pointing four fingers at a murderer.
What?
Now, stop that gun.
Oh, no.
Yeah. A twist of the wrist and we're equals again. Shall we go now? I'd like to see the other members of your family, present and future.
You'll never convince me, Mulligan, that four streaks on a negative mean murder.
How about letting me try, Tony?
You also said, Tim, that you know who killed Matt Casey.
Oh, I did say that, didn't I, Fraser?
Yes.
I'll go a step further. The person who killed Matt also killed George.
I've had enough of this. I want you to get out of here, Tim.
In time. But whether you listen to me or not doesn't matter. I know you'll listen to the sheriff.
All right, Tim. Prove your sunstreak theory.
Thank you, Doctor. Well, Marion and I found this film next to Matt's body. He was lying at the entrance to a cave, and the rocks were piled high.
So?
No sun or light flooded that cave. The film wasn't ruined, but somehow one ray of sun got through between the rocks and left these marks on the film.
But where's the murderer, Tim?
In this room, Fraser. Today's the 22nd of June. Yesterday was the first day of summer, the longest day of the year. Do you see now what these streaks mean?
That's still a lot of nonsense.
The day before yesterday was shorter. And the day before that still shorter. The position of the sun changes every day. As the days get longer, the sun rises higher. Anybody want to question that fact?
Oh, I see what you mean, Tim. According to that evidence, Matt was killed 4 days ago.
Yes, Tony. He didn't return to camp 2 days ago, as Fraser told us.
Fraser!
Oh, what's the use? It's going to be found out sooner or later. Nobody believed Tony would deliberately give Uncle George the wrong medicine.
Fraser!
I didn't plan it that way when I started. I was going to frighten him to death, but it didn't work, so I came back here and switched labels on the bottles. The medicines looked alike, the same color. I would have done anything then to get Uncle George out of the way.
Why, Fraser?
Well, up at the camp, I overheard him talking to Matt Casey about a new will.
Yes?
I didn't know what was going into it, but I was sure he was going to cut me out. He didn't like some of the people I'd been fooling around with in town.
So you killed Matt Casey to keep him from bringing back the new will?
Yes. But if I'd only read the thing before I burned it, Uncle George would be alive now. I'd have known. Lord, help me. I'd have known.
That's right, Tim. George told us. His whole estate goes to Marion and Fraser except his property.
Yes, the national park. Fraser, why didn't you fix those bottles after you switched them?
I'd have known. He told me and I'd forgotten what I'd done. I was too happy. Too happy.
And so closes tonight's Crime Club book, The Sun is a Witness, based on a story by Aaron Mark Stein. Stedman Coles did the radio adaptation. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Raymond Edward Johnson played Tim Mulligan, and Sidney Smith was Tony Blake. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello. I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. In the meantime... Well, in the meantime, there is a new Crime Club book available at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we'll look for you next week.
This program came from New York.
Crime Club, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 3rd, 1947 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Writing credit for that story, The Sun is a Witness, goes to Aaron Mark Stein. As you can imagine, during radio's golden age, just like television and the movies, thousands upon thousands of scripts were submitted to radio shows for possible dramatization, and at least on record, this would be Aaron Mark Stein's only radio credit during its golden era. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for the story Element X on The Whistler, a CBS episode from April 6th, 1952.
Presented by the United States Air Forces in Europe.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Tonight, transcribed, it's the Whistler's strange story, Element X.
An interesting and sometimes dangerous part of living is the unexpected, the oddity of chance, circumstances beyond our control. It was chance that brought Grant Forbes out of a downtown building at almost the same time that his friend Lieutenant Driscoll of Homicide was passing by. Yes, Grant, chance brought you together that day, didn't it? And as the two of you continued along the sidewalk, chatting, neither of you had any thought of the sudden, violent action that was to burst forth as you rounded a certain street corner.
Stop! I'll shoot!
What is it?
Get back, Grant, against the wall! Come on! Robbery. Looks like one of our patrolmen winged somebody. All right, keep back, folks.
What's it all about, officer?
Oh, Lieutenant Driscoll. Hold up, sir. I just happened to walk into Mr. Reynolds' store. This guy turned, starts to run out, and Reynolds yelled.
We heard the rest. Good work, officer.
Nothing to it, Lieutenant. Just happened.
That's a funny thing, Grant. I don't know if it happens in your law cases, but the way that hold-up artist got caught, I call it Element X.
Well, how do you mean?
Oh, the unexpected, a surprise.
Oh, like the way that cop walked in on him?
Exactly. Or sometimes maybe it's a woman who happens to be looking out the window. She gets a look at a license plate or notices the color of a car. I'd rather be on this side of the law.
Oh, I don't know, Lieutenant. Element X can be taken care of. Figured out. These hoods ought to consult a good lawyer first.
Said it later, huh? And now, Grant, I've seen it too often. You can't beat the unpredictable. Oh, here's my car. Drop you someplace, counselor?
Counselor? That's a laugh. I haven't counseled three people in the last month.
Come on, hop in.
Okay, Lieutenant. So, you know, you may be right about your Element X at that.
Now what?
I wasn't expecting this ride.
Talk to your friend, Lieutenant Driscoll, wasn't it, Grant? Yes. And they were weeks that seemed like months. And then came that phone call that was to make so much difference.
What was the name again?
Markham, Floyd Markham. I'd like for you to drop out here to Malibu, Mr. Forbes. Discuss a certain domestic matter.
Okay, I'll be there.
That place is all by itself. Just past the Mar Vista turnoff on the beachfront. Red Cottage, Flagstone Front. It's called Surfside. I think that's easier to look for than the number.
Definitely. Mr. Markham, I was wondering, how did you happen to call me?
I've done some inquiring around. I understand you're an attorney who won't object to doing some personal research.
You mean following somebody around? A little gumshoe work?
Call it what you like. You'll be here, won't you?
I'll be there.
Tonight, please. 10 sharp.
Tonight. 10 sharp. Check.
You've little choice, have you, Grant? Too few of your clients believe in paying their bills on time. And Floyd Markham sounds like a man with a problem. And a man with money. That night, you're right on time and approaching Markham's secluded cottage on the waterfront when you see someone slipping out of a side door, a woman. You step back in the shadows as she runs past you to a parked car. Then you hurry into the cottage.
Oh, Mr. Markham.
Lydia. Lydia.
You know at a glance that the man at your feet is through, don't you, Grant? You stoop down quickly beside him. His identification tells you for certain that he's Floyd Markham, the man who sent for you. And you're afraid it's too late to find out why.
Mr. Markham, who was it? Who did this?
Lydia. Lydia. My wife.
Your wife? She shot you? She ran out of here?
Yes. Lydia. Lydia.
Mr. Markham? So long, Mr. Markham. You know, your little Lydia just might have better luck with Element X.
Well, Grant, your visit to the Malibu cottage of Floyd Markham, the way you walked in on his murder was all along the lines of your friend Lieutenant Driscoll's theories about Element X, the unforeseen, the surprise that so often goes against criminals and murderers. It would go very badly now for Lydia Markham, too, wouldn't it, if you decided to play on the side of the lieutenant. But you haven't decided it that way, have you? No. Instead, you let a week go by. A week of watching the newspapers to see what the police know. A week in which Floyd Markham's funeral takes place, with his wife putting in an appearance as a grief-stricken, confused widow. And then you decide to pay her a visit.
Mrs. Markham?
Yes?
I'd like to talk to you. On behalf of a client of mine. Oh, my card.
Grant Forbes, counselor at law.
Permit me to explain, Mrs. Markham. My client was a witness to a, well, a sort of an accident. A shooting, I believe.
Ralph!
Huh?
Ralph!
Oh, what's the matter, huh?
Oh, who's this?
Mr. Forbes.
Grant Forbes, counselor at law.
Ralph, I think we should talk to him.
Come on in, Mr. Forbes.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm Ralph Leonard. You should know, too, that Mrs. Markham here has undergone a strain. You see, her husband...
I know about the late Mr. Markham, and I would prefer to talk to Mrs. Markham in private, if it's agreeable.
Well, Ralph, Mr. Leonard is my... Well, he was my husband's closest friend. You can say whatever you have to say to both of us.
I think I understand. However, under the circumstances, Mrs. Markham...
Get to the point, Forbes.
All right. Mrs. Markham, my client, who must at the moment be nameless, observed some interesting things on a certain night about 10 days ago. More specifically, it was the night that Mr. Markham, how did the newspapers phrase it? Oh, yes. Died at the hands of a person or persons unknown.
Your client, counselor, he thinks this should have been phrased differently?
He would change only the one word, unknown.
Mm-hmm. Ralph. Take it easy, Lydia. Okay, counselor.
Okay? You mean that if my client should require a slight fee for his silence...
I mean get out of here.
Well, now you're making a mistake, Mr. Leonard.
You're making a mistake if you don't get out. You haven't any client. You're just a cheap, low shyster.
Lower than a murderess, Mr. Leonard? Very well. My client won't like this, however.
Supposing I told you there's half a dozen witnesses who'd swear your client was wrong, lying.
Money buys many things, Mr. Leonard. In Mrs. Markham's interests, I would say it might be less expensive to buy one closed mouth rather than six perjured ones.
I'll decide what's best for Mrs. Markham's interests.
Very well. My client won't like this, however.
Good day, counselor.
Good
Perhaps the last good day for Mrs. Markham. Relax, Mr. Leonard. I'm going.
You walk out of the apartment, Grant. You're not sure, are you? Not sure how stubborn Ralph Leonard intends to be. And then, as you're waiting for the elevator to take you down...
Oh, Mrs. Markham.
I slipped out the service door. I haven't much time. Please, tell your client that... We have to wait a few days.
To wait a few days?
I'll arrange something. I mean, about the fee.
Oh, yes. You have my card, Mrs. Markham.
Yes.
I'll hear from you soon.
Very soon, I promise. I must get back now.
Mrs. Markham.
Yes.
If this is a stall, something to get me off guard while your dear friend Ralph figures out how to get me out of the way.
I give you my word, he doesn't even know I'm out here. Please, Mr. Forbes, trust me.
Oh, I'm the trusting sort, Mrs. Markham. Very much so. All right. I'll give you what you ask. A few days.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Good day, Mrs. Markham. I'll be looking forward to making any reasonable settlement for my client.
Riding down in the elevator, you feel better about it, don't you, Grant? Yes. But that evening, as you park your car and start down the street toward your apartment, the shots splatter into the building wall beside you. You fall quickly to the ground. And as you look up, a car with Ralph Leonard at the wheel swerves crazily around the corner. As you get to your feet, you realize grimly that he's decided to make certain of your silence to protect Lydia Markham and perhaps her money as well. Following day, you hit upon a neat and simple plan for eliminating Ralph, without risk to yourself. You're unaware, of course, as you go about locating Ralph Leonard's telephone number, that at a point some 200 miles upstate, Element X is starting on its way toward you.
This is your friend, the counselor. Remember?
Oh, yeah. I remember.
I'd like to make a deal, Mr. Leonard. I'm talking about a partnership. You play ball with me, and we can make ourselves a little money.
Go on, Counselor. You interest me.
Mrs. Markham need never know you're part in it. And we split the profits. Well?
Now, look, I...
Yes?
Suppose we get together, huh? Sort of talk this over, huh?
Fine. I'll let you know where and when.
I'll be here at my apartment, Counselor.
You smile, don't you, Grant, as you hang up the receiver? You know what Ralph Leonard is thinking, what he's planning. Because he believes you're stupid enough to meet him at a quiet rendezvous where he can do his talking with a gun. You hurry out of your office, get into your car, and drive uptown to Mrs. Markham's apartment.
I asked you to give me a few more days, Mr. Forbes.
I know, Mrs. Markham, but I suddenly discover I have some rather pressing financial obligations to meet, and...
You or your client, Mr. Forbes?
Oh, come, Mrs. Markham. Surely you must have guessed. Your friend Ralph did.
Yes.
Aren't you going to ask me to sit down?
Of course. And allow me to serve cocktails.
Thank you, no. Bit too early in the day yet.
No.
As I was saying...
You're pressed, financially.
I am indeed, Mrs. Markham. A few thousand would tide me over for a while.
Well, I don't have the money here. Can you come back tonight?
If you don't mind, I'd rather we met somewhere else.
Very well.
I'll phone you later. Tell you where.
I see. Now, if there's nothing further...
There is. I think I'll have that martini after all.
You've completed the second step of your plan, haven't you, Grant? Yes. And now you must select the scene of the crime. After you leave Mrs. Markham's apartment, you drive back downtown. Find the perfect setup. A a dark, quiet street in the factory and warehouse district. Still unaware that Element X, moving relentlessly toward you, is now less than 50 miles away. A few minutes before 9 that night, you step into a phone booth in a drugstore across the street from Ralph Leonard's apartment.
Yes, Counselor. I was wondering when you'd call.
Still interested in talking business, Mr. Leonard?
Of course I am.
Good. Suppose we meet on the southeast corner of 17th and Shannon, warehouse district. You know where it is?
Oh, I'll find it, Counselor.
There's a building entrance about 15 feet south. Wait for me in there.
All right, I'll leave right away.
Forbes, Mrs. Markham.
I have the money. $3,000.
I'm afraid that's not enough.
What? Well, you said that...
I know. That was this afternoon. Now I need $10,000.
$10,000? But where can I get that kind of money at this time of night? I'll be reasonable.
Look, you've got jewelry.
Well, yes, but...
That'll do till tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
When your bank opens. You can get me the rest of the $10,000. You might as well get used to this. Yours was a very expensive murder, baby.
Yes. Wasn't it?
Oh, and if you're thinking of calling your boyfriend, Mr. Leonard, when I hang up, don't bother. He just left his apartment building.
You think of everything, don't you?
Sure. He thinks he's got a date to meet me. While he's waiting up in Hollywood for me to show, you and I will be meeting somewhere else.
Now, listen to me. Give me a break, please.
Save it, sweetheart. Meet me in half an hour, or I'll write a little letter to the police.
No. No, don't do that.
Half an hour. That's all you have. I'll be waiting at the southeast corner of 17th and Shannon. There's a building entrance about 15 feet south of the corner. I'll be standing in there.
You've played the part perfectly, haven't you, Grant? Yes, and the trap is set. Mrs. Markham is desperate now, isn't she? Yes, she's killed before. And you're certain you've driven her to the point where she'll kill again. You hurry to your car and start toward the scene of the rendezvous. While only a few miles away now, Element X is moving toward 17th and Shannon. But you've forgotten all about Element X, haven't you, Grant? Minutes later, you park your car down the block. Move along the darkened street swiftly. Move as close to the corner as you dare and see Ralph Leonard standing in the shadows of the building entrance. You turn back now and ease down the street a few doors and slip into a small bar.
How do you do?
Evening.
What'll it be?
Let me see. Scotch and soda, I guess.
All right.
Things sort of quiet around here, aren't they?
Yep. Not much doing this time of night.
Well, why stay open?
Oh, business picks up later when the shift from the factory gets off. How did the boys come in for a beer?
I see.
Yeah, sir.
Thanks. Have one on me.
Well, okay. I don't mind if I do. Beer's my drink. Well, here's cheers.
To success.
Yes. Ah.
Hey, what's that? It
sounded like shots to me.
It sure did. Come on. I'd say we better have a look.
Driscoll from Homicide stood quietly in front of the entrance to a building some 15 feet south of 17th and Shannon, making notes in a small black book. And from time to time, he glanced down at the bullet-riddled body of Ralph Leonard. A short distance down the block, a police car was parked near a large truck and trailer. The squad car sergeant, finished with his questioning of the truck driver, came slowly to the spot where Lieutenant Driscoll was standing.
Did you get a statement from the truck driver, Sergeant?
I did, Lieutenant. According to him, he was barreling down the street at a pretty good clip when suddenly a woman driving a green sedan whipped around the corner and started pumping shots at this man, Leonard, standing in this entryway here.
Go on.
Well, one of the bullets went wild, hit the front truck tire, and there was a blowout.
And the truck went out of control, crashed into the front of that bar, huh?
The truck hit a guy as he was coming out, just missed the bartender.
The other guy hurt bad?
Died just a few minutes ago. The name's Forbes, Grant Forbes.
Grant Forbes? The attorney?
Well, that's what his card says. Why, did you know him?
Yeah, I knew him.
He had plenty to say before he died, Lieutenant. Told me who was driving that green car and fired those shots. A Mrs. Lydia Markham.
Element X.
Element X? Say, that's what Forbes said before he died. That's what he called the truck. Element X. What do you suppose he meant by that?
Oh, it was sort of a theory between us. Now it's a dead secret.
Again next week, when once again the United States Air Forces in Europe present The Whistler.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from the 6th of April, 1952. And that does it for this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.